Good evening. You are listening to Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM, Northampton, Massachusetts.
I do not believe that a few people should control the wealth of any land, that it should be a collective ownership.
My fellow citizens,
your enemy is ruling your country, and war is what they got.
It was the largest bank failure in U.S. history.
Americans are concerned about the adjustments that are taking place in our financial markets.
And people are working harder, but still falling behind.
People said, are you optimistic? I said, absolutely.
There was blood on the floor at the end of trading on Wall Street today.
A financial tsunami.
One of the ugliest days I have ever seen.
Absolutely optimistic.
Nightmare on Wall Street.
The atomic bomb.
Almost Armageddon.
A 9 on the Richter scale.
Something of a financial hurricane hitting the United States today.
Absolutely optimistic. His optimism is absolute. It is total. There are no mixed indicators.
Price of homes, they fell again, a record 16.3% according to the...
Yet another giant lender was taken over.
Greed is rewarded. Excess is rewarded.
Recent economic indicators have become increasingly mixed.
They have a gun pointed at their head, and they're trying to tell us that if we don't give them $700 billion, they're going to pull the trigger.
Nor is people asking the question of what does all of this mean for me?
There's been a class war waged in America for 30 years now, from the top down. And the rich have won.
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in.
The war is going well enough that there's no need to end it. And just as importantly, it's not going well enough that there's any possibility of ever ending it.
2/3 of Americans say it's not worth fighting.
So?
So? You're not, you don't care what the American people think?
No.
Those weapons of mass destruction got to be somewhere. Nope, no weapons over there.
Maria, women have enough.
Maybe under here.
Right, you're not saying they out and out lied, Michelle.
No, I mean, what do we know? What do you think? I don't know.
These are revolutionary times.
You don't say that out loud.
I prescribe the treatment of a radical revolution within our nation from that of a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented community.
We must be prepared to match actions with words. By seeking out every creative method of protest possible.
For the past 30 years, the productivity of American workers has increased by 76%. But their real hourly wages have risen less than 2%.
Even a worker in the lowest paying position has a right to get by and support a family with a good union job.
So the paradox is that people are working harder, but still falling behind.
I ask Congress to appropriate additional money to protect corporate America and to punish American workers. But I have a fundamental belief in the goodness and strength of the American worker.
I think Senator McCain and I agree for the most part on...
How much can you really trust what a CEO says?
And when the American president speaks, it's really important for those words to mean something.
Bolshevism! Sheer Bolshevism!
Change has to come from below.
A time comes when silence is betrayal. That time has come for us.
To ignore the facts of history and the aggressive impulses of an evil empire, and thereby remove yourself from the struggle between right and wrong and good and evil. Let us be aware that while they predict its eventual domination of all peoples on the earth, they are the focus of evil in the modern world.
My interest is in terrorism in its broadest sense, because the purpose of terrorism is to terrorize.
The Dow Industrial fell 500 points.
And to terrorize is to deny people their freedom. Anyone looking at the attack today can see that it was well-organized, well-financed, and vicious.
Following the largest bankruptcy in American history, Lehman Brothers collapsed after 158 years. Fellow financial giant Merrill Lynch was saved from the scrap heap with the Bank of America buyout. But don't worry, Lehman's commercial real estate is insured by the massive American International Group, better known as Notorious AIG, which today...
Terrorism is something that is not done cheaply.
What's that? Nearly collapsed. Why? Because AIG actually sought to solve their financial problems, seriously, by lending money to themselves.
And funds will be required.
Is anybody buying this polished turd?
America, take the word of a madman.
There comes a time when the operation of the machine is so odious that you cannot even tacitly participate. You've got to place your bodies on the gears, the wheels, all the mechanism, and you've got to indicate to those who own it and those who run it that unless you are free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
While the Israelis and Palestinians have not yet produced an agreement, they have made important progress. They have laid a new foundation of trust for the future.
Do you know anything? Do you have any idea? What are you talking about?
By the way, I'm not an architect, but I find that when you're laying a new foundation, don't make it out of C4. Really unstable for a foundation material.
There's no feelings for the dead. He's just calling out for more. ExxonMobil likes it, so he's happy to make war. He'll send your child to die somewhere far across the sea. Bombing Afghan villages in the name of liberty. He says you're with us or against us, and he is keeping score. His agents are all over, they might be breaking down your door. He lives for death, he is the evil Axis, and I am sick of theory. Let's talk about praxis. I have seen the enemy. He's right there in the spotlights. And if this song were a rifle, I would have him in my sights. He's found his raison d'etre. He is the global cop. With peace, he loses purpose, so the fight will never stop. He'll always find the villain, that's the nature of the game. He'll always be at war, in fact, it's his middle name. He's got a master plan, it's called global domination. A new world under God and one massive corporation. He says he's fighting for our safety, he's an expert at disguises, but security for him is when the Dow Jones rises. I have seen the enemy. He's right there in the spotlights. And if this song were a rifle, this old friend of Bin Laden knows exactly what he's doing. It's a family tradition to win at any cost. Never mind the lies or all the lives that must be lost. And let me tell you something else. This song is not a gun, and it will cause harm to no one when all is said and done. 'Cause it's just words and we need action. So let me clearly state, this is the time to change the world, because soon enough might be too late. I have seen the enemy. Right there in the spotlights. And if this song were a rifle, I would have him in my sights.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear and will, to the best of my ability, faithfully execute the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
Congratulations.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens. Now it is a seed upon the wind, taking root in many nations.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. We cannot let terrorists and rogue nations hold this nation hostile or hold our allies hostile. Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists. Bring them on.
A new age is dawn, rising from the ashes of the innocent. My dead versus your dead, let's see who can get more militant. Blood for blood, pound for pound, an eye for an eye. My tribal goddess told me that I must murder or die. You kill to the mind, I must kill 10,000 of yours. Preemptively decapitate all those who dare to oppose. Shoot the motherfucker now and ask questions much later. Terrorist freedom by the innocent bystander instigator. It don't matter, your ass is brown, you got a towel on top of your head. You prayed over a god, you pray to mine or I'll shoot you dead. Patriot sidewinders, M1s and F-16s. The most beautiful display of destruction mankind has ever seen. I'm not an invader, I came here to liberate your people. Carpet bombing your mind so I can build my church steeple. Yeah, freedom and democracy, baseball and apple pie. Buy and consume or go bye, bye, bye. Now who the f*** do you think you are to go against my manifest destiny? I got a mandate from my God to smite all of my enemies. Look at me the wrong way and I'll put your ass on my sh**. What, you want some of this bitch? I'll take you for a ride with no witness. What would Jesus do? Yeah, you know it's just the front to a piece. The Bible thumpers while I do what the f*** I want. Propagating propaganda, live in fear and I'll protect ya. I'll raise the terror alert and you know that I'm gonna check ya. What books do you read? Who do you talk to? Where you going? What's your habit? Give me all your information right now. What's your number? I gotta have it. Big brother ain't got shit on me. I got eyes in the back of your brain. My name is Super W and I come to bring you the pain.
This were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You're serving after child of an archaic plutocratic system. If it was something else, you would have missed them. Playing games with puppies, cats, let's bankrupt the company, make bank other options. Pension plan, scant million, neck deep in corruption. Power to the people, know the power belongs to the white men in the white collars. Gathering every single day to worship in the temple of the dollar. Mr. Greenspan, Mr. Greenspan, tell me which way the wind blows. And why are all these people jumping out of their f***ing windows? Why are all these mothers crying for children that won't return? Their blood spilling in the desert while the city of Baghdad burns. The black blood that feeds the empire must never stop flowing. No price is too high, we must keep shocking and awing. It's the project for the new American century, the new world order. An empire disguised as democracy, prostituted and distorted. You think the start of the day the towers came falling down? No, it's an old idea we've been munching on and kicking around. We've been waiting to scratch that itch for a long time in Mesopotamia. Even though we all know the hijackers were mostly Saudi Arabian. Pay no mind to the lies, the shell games and the deception. We're here to fight for your freedom, we're only here for your protection. I don't remember Guadalcanal, Antietam, Normandy or the Mekong. I'm sending you and you never get to die like I'm on PlayStation Ghost Recon. Playing like I'm a Top Gun, mission accomplished on an aircraft carrier. Working hard every day to make the world scarier and scarier. A kind of gentler version of daddy, check this conservative's compassion. Read my lips, mother. Time for lights, camera, and action. This power trip me higher than back in the day doing cocaine. My name is Super W and I'm really f***ing insane.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
I'm setting the stage for a show which you've never seen an equal. You thought 9/11 was tight, hold up, I'm getting ready for the sequel. Whatever the cost, whatever the price, to buy me 4 more years. A few more terror attacks, more lives, you keep you living in fear. Call Rush, call O'Reilly, get on the phone with Mr. Hannity. Spin the web of deception so we continue with this insanity. Don't ask too many questions, deploy weapons of mass distraction. Prepare the foot soldiers, it's almost time to jump into action. The second coming of the rapture, the last holy crusade. I'm smiting infidels left and right, giving them a taste of my righteous blade. The power to destroy the world right here in the palm of my hand. I'm bringing eternal salvation by air, sea, and by land. With us or against us, only two roads that you could choose. The Almighty is on my side and there's no way that I could lose. It's the coalition of the sellouts, motherfucker, the United Nations. I'm reading the Bible in my comp for my divine inspiration. The ultimate corporate state only dreamed of by Mussolini. In the innermost of the inner circles, rubbing elbows and sipping martinis. In bed with CEOs, Saudi princes, and Israeli ministers. I serve only them and follow their orders, no matter how sinister. I'm a schoolyard bully, give me your milk money and play my game. The only bastard on the planet getting by on his last name. Can't even pronounce nuclear missile, but I know how to pull the trigger. Kick back and relax while the empire grows bigger and bigger. Genghis Khan, Caesar, Alexander the Great. I'm digging all those niggas. This is the perfect fascist state. Don't mess with Texas, mother. Don't mess with me or I'll blow your brains. I'm Super Duper W. This is my world and my game.
International law. I better call my lawyer. He didn't bring that up to me. Bring him on.
This is a precious gift. What America is all about. Thank you.
It's time to stop talking It's time to start acting. I ask Congress to appropriate additional money to protect corporate America and to punish American workers. And we're making good progress. There's a lot of actions that take place that you'll never see. Rounding people up slowly but surely. And that's positive. That's a positive development. Now I'll be glad to answer some questions you have. We'll start here, David.
Thank you very much. I wanted to know, and I'm sure the American people do too, what you plan on doing as far as tracking down the CEOs of the corporations that seem to be robbing many Americans blind.
By far, the vast majority of CEOs in America are obviously trying to scam somebody. And these are like international criminals is what they act like. They kind of hide and order things up and hide again, but nothing has changed. And that's how the system is supposed to work. Yeah, I am.
Mr. President, the FBI requested members of Congress to take polygraph tests. Now, is your administration pursuing criminals in Congress?
That's what I keep trying to explain to the American people. Key members of Congress, these people are cold-blooded killers. They're interested in killing innocent Americans still. And therefore, we will continue to pursue them. I actually didn't read the whole story about somebody down there at level 5 flexing some know-how muscle. But it's a frame of mind. We take lives killing thousands. That's how I look at it.
Mr. President, how do you respond to the criticism that you have a tendency to procrastinate?
I don't like it a bit, and I'm going to talk about it tomorrow. And tomorrow I'm going to talk about some specifics, and I probably can save those for tomorrow.
Fictitious reasons. Shame on you! Whether it's the fictitious of duct tape or the fictitious of orange alert, we are against this war, Mr. Bush! Shame on you!
Let the bankers pay for the crisis of the banks. I think that's an argument that many people would accept. Ordinary people who never thought about politics certainly wouldn't consider themselves to be Marxists, but they ask themselves all the time, they ask themselves the same question. This question is repeated in every bus stop now. In every marketplace, in every shop, in every street, in every pub, the same question is being asked. The question is this. It's very simple. Look, I, as a worker, if I make a mistake, or as a small businessman, the middle class also are interested in this question, if I make a mistake, then I pay for it. I lose my job, or in the case of a small businessman, I go bust. But here are the bankers sitting on billions and billions or trillions of assets, who have made colossal profits in the last period, super profits, who have made a complete mess of the financial situation, have landed whole companies, families, individuals, pensioners, even whole countries, in the case of Iceland, a whole nation has been reduced to bankruptcy by these irresponsible policies, irresponsible even from a capitalist point of view. And yet, are they punished? Are they sacked? They don't even get their fingernails trimmed. On the contrary, they get rewarded. If I make a mistake, I get that. If a worker makes a mistake, I get the sack. If a small businessman makes mistakes, he goes bust. But if a big banker makes a mistake, the state, that's to say the public, ultimately it's the public, it's the taxpayer, it's the poor people that pay the bill for this, hands over billions of dollars. Now, where's the justice in that? Where's the sense in that? People can't see it. No matter which way you look at it, people can't see this. And therefore, people are questioning this. And therefore, our slogan is precisely that. I think it fits in with the general mood of people. Most people would say, let the rich pay. Let big business pay. Let the bankers pay for their own crisis. And certainly the workers don't accept this. We don't accept that the working class or the middle class should be saddled with this kind of burden. There is, I believe, a change in consciousness. I think in the past people saw Marxists maybe as rather unrealistic people, I don't know what, crazy people, fanatics, with unrealistic ideas which didn't correspond to the real world. I think that attitude is beginning to change. It's beginning to change because ordinary people are now beginning to question the viability of market economics. Now, I can't resist quoting from this copy of the Financial Times, which I have before me, dated Wednesday, November the 5th. It was just after Obama was elected in America, which, by the way, itself indicates a change, doesn't it? I mean, the fact that in America, people didn't used to vote in America. Nobody voted in America. And here you had people queuing up at 6 o'clock in the morning, queuing up. Now, that must be to vote for a black person. First time in history. Now, there is a change, of course. There's a change in what? Not a change in the political system, because I believe that Obama will turn out to be no different in his conduct and his policies to Bush and Clinton and all the rest of the establishment. He's part of the establishment. Where there is a change, without the slightest doubt, is in the mood of masses of millions of people in America who at least are beginning to question. When you ask these people queuing up at 6 o'clock, ordinary people who never read a political book in their life, who are not Marxists by any stretch of the imagination, ask them a simple question. Why are you voting? Why are you queuing up to vote for Obama? The answer is very simple. We want a change. We're fed up with this. We want a change. And therefore, I would say that is at least the beginning of a mood for change, the beginning of a revolutionary mood, if the truth were to be told, in the United States itself. To return to this article by someone called Chrystia Freeland, I don't know who this woman is, a journalist from the Financial Times, but she pointed out an amusing thing. This year at Halloween, you know Halloween, they have, in America they have fancy dress parties, they dress up as witches and ghosts and things like that. This year, the fashion was that people turned up dressed up as Sarah Palin, you know, the vice candidate, the Republican vice presidential candidate. But the interesting thing, that in itself is quite amusing, but the interesting point, she goes on to say the following, and I quote, that day, a senior Wall Street executive ruefully predicted to me that next year it will be New York bankers who are the nation's villains of choice. Now, that is quite sedentary. She goes on, quoting, in private, this is extremely significant, I think. This, of course, is not meant to be read by workers. This is an internal bulletin of the wealthy people, the capitalist class. In private, she says, in private, some of America's most influential business and political leaders are uttering the same warning. Now, that's interesting. With the election resolved, the big political story in the U.S. will be the wave of public anger directed at capital and capitalists, particularly of the financial variety. This is dynamite. And by the way, she quotes here, and I repeat, in case you didn't get it, some of America's most influential business and political leaders at the very top. They're saying, we're in trouble here. You see, this electoral circus managed to distract people's attention for 12 months or more from the issue of the crisis. Now it's over. Yes, and now it's over. And Obama will have to clear up the mess. He'll be presented with the bill. Millions of Americans will say, look, we voted for you, and now we expect action, which, of course, will not be forthcoming. Yeah, I'll just continue this most interesting quote. In recent weeks, a former Clinton cabinet member warned a private equity firm, he advises, that this new hostility will be the single biggest threat facing the company, An East Coast senator told a lunchtime group of Wall Street supporters that public anger towards them will top the political agenda, and he expressed sympathy for the people's rage. I could go on. Now, this is astonishing stuff to find in page 2 of the Financial Times. It's an indication, I repeat, of a change. And therefore, our manifesto, unlike in the past, far from being, it's not something that's come from the planet Mars, it actually reflects the concerns, the ferment, if you like, the growing mood of criticism that exists even in the belly of the beast, even in the United States itself, and of course in Britain. Although apparently there's not much happening in Britain, and no big strikes taking place. You see, strikes are not the only index of discontent within society. I believe that there's never been a moment, certainly since the Second World War, in which there was such a degree of ferment in society, a ferment of discontent, as there is at this moment in time. Of course, one could expect that the first reaction of working people will be of shock, of disbelief. They're not Marxists, they don't have the benefit of the discussions as we've had. We're not surprised by this, or we shouldn't be surprised, having discussed it for so many years. There's a state of shock.
Well, my God says, run. You keep on running every day.
Blood gonna run.
Well, you know the running stone got an ass out of killing.
If the rich man don't try to help the poor man, blood gonna run like that. Blood gonna run.
And that the rich man.
Kadari, who joins us now live on the phone, thank you very much for joining us. Tell us what you're seeing right now.
It's terrorizing. You know, we are in the dark. 1 million of the Gazans are in the dark now, but all you can hear now, drones hovering in the sky of Gaza at 16, striking from time to time. And also artillery shells, and you can hear the what's happening, you know, in east of Gaza. And the crazy thing, you know, even in this neighborhood where I am now, Israel, you know, everybody thinks that Israel will bomb a mosque nearby, which is like less than 100 meters away from where I live. And some in the neighborhood, you know, escaped, but like others were too. No shelters, no places. Those who escaped, they escaped into another neighborhood that is also dangerous. You don't know where is safe anymore. Israeli planes drop many leaflets in the entire, you know, in every inch of Gaza City saying evacuate. And in the north, they even dropped leaflets telling people evacuate to the city, but also in the city they are dropping these leaflets warning the population to leave. It's really terrorizing. Shihab?
Yeah, I mean, there are these rumors then, and the suggestion from those leaflets that mosque may be targeted. Is there any sign of Hamas in your neighborhood?
No, not at all. And you, this is the thing. You don't know what's the target anymore. What's the target anymore? You don't know who is your neighbor anymore. You don't know who's living in your neighborhood anymore. There are no Hamas leaders in my neighborhood. But you don't know who is supporting, you know, you don't know. You are really, like, you don't know who is in the military wing anymore. You know, you are feeling like really in a trap everywhere in Gaza. The mosque, it's been always there, and all of a sudden, you know, like, they're bombing this mosque. You don't know why. There are some mosques in some neighborhood where, of course, fighters will take as refuge because they're everywhere, no places for them, and then Israel will justify the destruction of this mosque. But it's really terrorizing. This is the first time Israel is targeting mosque. They've never done it before. And I think it's kind of psychological war beside, of course, the military war, you know, that they are choosing to go, you know, into. But this is the first time they have succeeded in terrorizing every single person in Gaza. It's kind of punishing every individual.
Once you saw that drop of leaflets, though, saying you should leave, and of course Israel will say that they've discharged their responsibilities to minimize civilian casualties having dropped those leaflets, why didn't you leave the area?
Shihab, where to? Where to? I tried, you know, like if I talk about myself, and I hate talking about myself, I tried to escape to my brother's place. You know, I have a brother here. But he lives next to the sea. So it was really awful, you know, to be around that neighborhood because it's really close to the sea and Israeli warships are near there and the shelling is unbelievable. And as a journalist, I didn't want to be stuck a little bit far from the center. I live in the center of Gaza City. I want to be very close to the Shifa Hospital. I want to be able to move here and there in a few minutes. But I live next to the parliament that was destroyed. I live next to the police station. I live next to everything that was destroyed. And I felt every bombing. And it's really, like, you feel it's like it's in your house, you know, when the house is shaking as a result of this bombing, and then the windows will and then the fear. As a journalist, you see the aftermath of each bombing because you see all these dead people, all these injured people, and you are really more terrorized. And the crazy part, when you see all these children around you, I mean, like, the children, some of them are able to express themselves, others are not. Some can draw, and the drawing is really unbelievable. This is what they draw. They draw, like, a kid, he's 6 years old. This is what he drew. Like, it was silent night. We had candles, and then this is what he drew, like, a boy that is alive, and then a boy that is dead. And you ask him, why this guy is dead? And then he would say, you know, Israel killed this boy. And that boy is the friend of the other. And it's really like children are terrorized. And the fathers are unable to protect their kids. And it's really humiliating for the father figures. And also the mothers are trying to hide their fear away from their kids, but they are unable. So the moment they will hear the explosion, all the family members around you, and I really lived with many families here. I couldn't live on my own, so I really, like, I feel like I am an embedded, you know, reporter here, trying to move from a family to another family just to feel, you know, what is it like for families, for kids, for parents.
Tagreed Al-Qadari, thank you very much.
The money's to be the school of life, so the rich will live and the poor will die. And the poor will die. Kind of the reason why.
They grab all they have and run. But there is nowhere safe to go. This family tried to flee their home as word spread the Israeli military is close by, inside Gaza City. Explosions of white smoke, what many are saying is white phosphorus, floating above 1.5 million trapped people. The streets are empty except for those running from house to house, but now there is no front line in this war. Attacks are everywhere and anywhere, and the whole of Gaza feels like a target. Maysa El Khatib was speaking to Al Jazeera when a missile struck her building.
Please help us. The Israelis are bombing us with phosphorus bombs. Please help us. The shelling is continuous since last night. We are here in this place. We are around 500 families here under bombardment. Many children are here. The entire tower collapsed. Where are the Arabs? Where is the world? Where are the Arab countries? None of them is doing anything. We are being killed. 300 persons just killed in front of our eyes when a tower collapsed. Please stop this war.
And according to medical officials, thousands here are in the same position as Mesa.
You can hear screams on the radio, people asking for paramedics and for the ambulances. No ambulances can go. Thousands of people are trapped in apartment buildings that are on fire, and people don't have access to anywhere, to anything, no shelters, no nothing.
Wednesday night saw a series of strikes hit across the strip. This mosque in the southern town of Rafah amongst the targets. Just the latest in a long line of mosques, schools and homes hit by Israel over the past 20 days. Meanwhile, ground troops moved into Gaza City, tanks entering areas including Tel el-Hawa, minutes away from the heart of the city. A media tower amongst the buildings targeted by Israeli warplanes. Even the United Nations building in Gaza City was hit, and the compound inside shelled by Israeli forces. The airstrikes in Gaza City are becoming more and more intense. It's not safe to be on the streets, but even from here, our rooftop position, you can see how close those explosions are. With the clouds of black smoke just to the east there rising up into the sky, and a cloud of white smoke covering Gaza.
The people of Gaza are bracing themselves for more to come. This man says the Israeli army are shooting at everyone in residential areas, including women and children. And this woman told us she ran away from her home this morning, but that the tower she's in right now has already been hit. And as the sounds of war get louder, there's little anyone here can do but keep moving, hoping that the next place they get to will not be Israel's next target. Shireen Tadros, Al Jazeera, Gaza City.
White man blood gonna run. Every nation.
Tell not to give it to the black man. Tell not to tell it to the Syrian. Not to tell it to the Christian. So go to church and stay.
The poor lady need it.
But if you see your sister is down, give him an helping hand. Give him an helping hand.
Gaza sky in flames, the usual scene for the 11th day. No letting up on the targets the Israeli army has been shelling since Monday. The air bombardment continues through the night. With the ground offensive going deeper into the strip, fighting is taking place right on the outskirts of Gaza City itself. And while actual scenes are hard to see, this is the aftermath. This man was left with no single member of his family alive. His baby daughter in diapers. Her head was smashed. A pregnant lady in another home, killed with her four children. This man, the only survivor, when the Samoni family in a Zaytuna neighborhood perished under a barrage of Israeli rockets.
All my family died. My mother, my father, my wife, my son died, my sisters and their children, my cousins died.
Scores of Gaza families continuing to pour into hospitals, dead, injured, or bereft. The air and the mood of death spreading around the place. In this house, there was once a family. In one blow, it was turned into dust. An entire extended household of children, parents, grandparents, obliterated instantly.
My only resort is to God in my calamity. Only this afternoon my daughter was alive. Now she's no more.
Gazans don't know what to do. They're under siege and under fire from every direction. Their hospitals running out of medical supplies and even of space. Their fate is in the hands of their enemy. Mohammed Fari, Al Jazeera.
But every man gonna get paid according to his works. So the man that do it good and chick it bad, he will lose the love he had. But you see, the man that do good live forever.
Tonight, Israeli tanks and infantry cross the border into Gaza shortly after nightfall.
8 days of airstrikes, artillery, and naval bombardment.
Israelis admit this could take a long time.
Obviously, both sides of the complex situation are vigorously championed by American politicians.
I understand Israel's desire to protect itself.
I think what the Israelis are doing is very important.
Israel has no choice but to take military action.
The Israelis are doing the only thing they can possibly do to defend their population.
The missile firings into Israel, I think, brought a proper response from the Israelis.
See? It's the Mobius strip of issues. There's only one side. And as always, even the analogies flow one way.
All Americans know what we would be doing if rockets were landing in San Diego from Tijuana.
It's inconceivable to me that if missiles were coming out of Cuba into South Florida that we wouldn't respond.
If this were going on in the United States from Vancouver, Canada, into Seattle, would we react? Of course we do.
Let me just phrase it for you, something that'll bring it home. If you're in your apartment and somebody, emotionally disturbed person, is banging on the door screaming, "I'm going to come through this door and kill you," do you want us to respond with one police officer, which is proportional, or with all the resources at our command?
I guess it depends if I force that guy to live in my hallway and make him go through checkpoints every time he has to take shit. But then again, by removing him by force, as long as you really believe that there'll be no more crazy people left in New York, okay.
Not only do we not know where the money has gone, not only does the Treasury Department not know where the money has gone, not only did the government not put any safeguards on the first $350 billion to make sure the banks did not use it to dish out bonuses, raise salaries, or buy up smaller banks, but some of the money is now going to the very people who precipitated the crisis, the predatory lenders. The Assistant Inspector General of the Department of Housing and Urban Development has told Congress that several lenders who had been shut down for FHA loans years ago just started up handing out toxic mortgages again to more borrowers who will lose their shirts. Not only that, but a staggering number of the loan appraisers approved by the government are also corrupt, 199 of them having been disciplined by individual states, and 3,480 more of them having expired licenses. So how in the hell is this happening? How is the cure for predatory lending resulting in more predatory lending? One more time. Today we call it a bailout. Tomorrow we'll be calling it Why Daddy Went to Jail.
Well, I went down to the rich man's house and I took back what he stole from me. Took it back. Took back my dignity. Took back my humanity. Oh, I went down to the rich man's house and I took back what he stole from me. Took it back, took back my dignity. Took it back, took back my humanity. Now he's under my feet, under my feet, under my feet, under my feet. Ain't gonna let the system walk all over me. Well, I went down to the landlord's house and I took back what he stole from me. Took it back, took back my dignity. Took it back, took back my humanity. Oh, I went down to the landlord's house and I took back what he stole from me. Took it back, took back my dignity. Took it back, took back my humanity. Now he's under my feet. Under my feet, under my feet, under my feet. They're gonna let the house and I took back what he stole from me.
Took it back,
took back my dignity.
Took it back,
took back my humanity.
Oh, I
went down to the governor's house and I took back what he stole from me.
Quite amusing to me to read the press where constantly they say, oh, we've solved it now, we've solved it now, we've reached the bottom now. They've said that several times in the last 12 months. They said the same things in 1929 after the Wall Street crash. You read John Galbraith's excellent book, which is, I think, it's become a bestseller now, along with Marx's Capital, which has also become a bestseller. In Germany, particularly the eastern part of Germany, I think the sales of Das Kapital have gone up by about 300%. It's not an accident. People are looking for explanations. But Galbraith explains in his book that in the months following the Wall Street crash, on numerous occasions, people say, oh, no, there's a rally now. We've touched bottom. The crisis is now we've turned the corner. And they said the same thing. They said the same thing at the time of the Bear Stearns crisis. When was that? 6 months ago? March, yes, March. More than 6 months ago. And so, and of course, at each stage, they say, oh, we've turned the corner, now we've turned. And that just is just the prelude to a further collapse, a further crisis, a further collapse of prices, and more firm in it. And what we have to say is this, that in any case, it is entirely wrong, I repeat what I said at the beginning, it's entirely wrong to say that this crisis is due to the credit crunch, so-called. That's wrong. You see, in every capitalist crisis, starting in Marx's day, the first stage is a financial crisis. It's like a symptom. Financial crisis comes first, but then the real crisis starts. The real crisis starts afterwards, when it begins to hit the real economy. That's only starting now. Up till now, the last 12 months, 12 or 18 months, all you've had is a crisis in the fundamentally a crisis in the financial sector. That spread to construction, which is linked, by the way, because the collapse of house prices means that people, the builders can't make money, so they stop building. They lay off building workers. This has a knock-on effect, because not only do these building workers, I think about 750,000 building workers in America have lost their jobs in the last 12 months, if my memory serves me right. In addition to the fact that their spending power is drastically reduced, it also means, if you think about it, if people stop, it means a fall in demand for steel, for bricks, for cement, for nails, for hammers, for electrical equipment, for electricity, you name it. It is a knock-on effect. And this effect will only be work itself out gradually. Now you see that the car industry is in a mess in America. The American big car companies are bust. Chrysler is bust. General Motors is bust. Ford's is bust. This reflects hundreds of thousands of jobs. And not just the car workers themselves. And their families are affected, but other dependent industries. In turn, the crisis of the car industry and the economy in general produces a collapse in oil prices. Price of oil went up to about $140 a barrel a few months ago. Now it's heading towards $55 a barrel. This will affect the oil-producing countries. But it will also affect demand in the oil-producing countries. In other words, what we're dealing here with is a global crisis. As I've expressed it in several documents and articles, globalization manifests itself now as a global crisis of capitalism. This can't be questioned. It's a simple fact, which you can't argue against. Even the bourgeois economists accept that this is the case. The question is, how do we react? Now, the first thing that we have to say is that this crisis is the product of capitalism. It's the product of market. It's a damning indictment of market economics. They're damned out of their own mouths, these gentlemen, these ladies and gentlemen. Let's not forget the ladies, these ladies and gentlemen, bankers and so on and so forth. How does it come about that in order to save the banks, if the market system is so clever and is so absolute and is so brilliant and is so miraculous, where's the invisible hand? The invisible hand seems to have been withdrawn. They're in free fall. And therefore, they've got to resort to the states, to the state, to the government. Where is the superiority of private enterprise? The Economist actually admitted in an edition which I've got in my bag here a couple of weeks ago that the only way to save the market economy is by state intervention. Well, I mean, that's a contradiction in terms, isn't it? How does it come about? If these guys are so clever, if they're so brilliant, they have to rely upon the government. Of course, the idea is that the government will step in. That's also the idea of Gordon Brown and Alistair Darling and George W. Bush. The government will step in with taxpayers' money, will buy up worthless shares, because they're quite worthless. They're buying rubbish. They're leaving all the profitable stuff in private hands. The state steps in and purchases this useless rubbish, renovates these banks, pours in public money to make them profitable again, and then sell them off, which is monstrous. Our argument is, no. And by the way, the argument was, we require healthy banks because otherwise the whole system will seize up, which is true, by the way. The capitalist system requires credit and the free flow of credit in the same way as the human body requires blood. It's like the circulation of credit is like the circulation of blood in the body. If your blood circulation is interrupted, you're in serious bother. You will die. And if the credit system seizes up, then the capitalist system is in serious trouble. And if it permanently seizes up, it will also die. Can't exist. Yes, but the question is, all these trillions of dollars that they've plowed in, where is the recovery of credit? The banks have taken the money, said thank you very much, and they're still not lending. To the extent, the other day, I don't know if you noticed that, that not just the government, but even the governor of the Bank of England, who's a complete bourgeois, right-wing conservative, was forced to say on the television, look, to the bankers, look, for God's sake, please lend some money to business, or else we'll have to nationalize you completely. All the banks will have to be nationalized. The man actually said this. He was a right-wing conservative. Because the sad fact of the matter is the bankers are not lending. And that's typical of a recession. In a recession, banks do not lend. There is no credit. And the reason the bankers won't lend to other banks, so that's how it works. They lend to each other, and eventually the public gets a slice. But the reason they won't lend to another bank is that nobody knows which of these banks are viable. Nobody knows how many bad debts they have. And therefore, if I lend money to you, am I going to get it back? That's the question. Am I going to get it back? That's the big question. So they won't lend. No matter how much money is poured in, I don't think that they will not solve this. The crisis is going to get deeper. Deeper and deeper. How long will it last? Well, there's all kinds of guesses here. It's all guesswork. They don't know. Nobody knows. But now they're increasingly coming around to the point of view which we've had from the beginning. First of all, they denied that there could be a crisis at all. That was the first place. Then when it was carved on their forehead, they said, it'll only be in America. It won't affect the rest of the world. This is complete nonsense. Contradicts everything they said previously about globalization. We said that would not be the case. It would spread to become a world crisis. Then it spread to become a world crisis. They said, it'll only be a mild crisis and it won't last very long. Now they're saying each time they change the tune. Now they say something entirely different. Now they say, this is the deepest crisis since the Depression, and it'll be far deeper than what we thought a few months ago, and will last far longer than we thought. How long? Nobody knows how long. Nobody knows. But it's going to be very serious. And it will affect the lives, the jobs, the houses of millions of people. Millions of people are already affected. Both in America and Britain, the amount of people that are being evicted from their homes is increasing sharply. I think it's gone up in Britain. Repossessions have gone up by about 150% in Britain in the last few months. People are losing their homes. People are losing their jobs. People are losing their livelihoods. And there's a severe attack. And the whole conception is, although they're very careful, they must be very careful how they express it, because they're worried, as this excellent article in the Financial Times indicated, they're seriously concerned now, which they weren't concerned in the past. For God's sake, people are going to question us, are going to question our system, are going to question the capitalist system. They're going to become socialists. They're going to become revolutionaries. That's what this article is saying. And therefore, they're going to be very careful, and they present it in very rose-tinted colors. But the fact of the matter is that these colossal increases in debt, in state debt, in public debt, if you look at it dispassionately, look at it scientifically, can only mean one thing: a whole period of cuts and austerities. A whole period. And the whole idea is to put all the burden of the crisis on the shoulders of the working class and the middle class also. That's the name of the game. They try to present it in nice terms, but that's what it boils down to. So what's our position? Well, our position, first of all, because a Marxist must be active in the labour movement, in the real world, not in the study, but in the real world, we must participate in the trade union branches, in the Labour Party, in the labour movement as a whole. What is our position? Our position is, first of all, no cuts. We don't accept any cuts. We don't accept job losses. If a worker is to be laid off through no fault of his own, our argument is work or full maintenance. That's the traditional slogan of the labour movement in Britain. Work or full maintenance. Either you give us a job and make us productive because we wish to serve society, or else you must guarantee us the full maintenance, a living wage, not just the miserable sums which are paid out in unemployment benefits. And that must be universally applicable. But above all, we demand the maintenance of employment. If capitalists threaten to close the factories, we should say that these factories should be occupied. That was the slogan put forward by President Chavez in Venezuela. I think it's quite a good slogan in Spanish. Sounds better in Spanish because it rhymes. Fábrica cerrada, fábrica tomada. A factory that is closed is a factory occupied. Occupy the factory under workers' control. That's the way to deal with closures. Because once it's closed, it's finished. They will take the machines, they will strip it, they will sell it off to some asset stripping hedge fund company, and you'll be left with nothing. They'll tear the guts out of the place. And therefore, our position would be to take the factories over and maintain them under workers' control, such that they can't be stripped, they can't be destroyed. That these jobs should be preserved, not just for the present generation, but for the future generation. The effects of unemployment, particularly on the youth, are tragic. I mean, they are terrible. You've already got a situation developing in Britain and in all countries of lumpenization, of demoralization of sections of the youth, unemployed youth with no future, living in bad conditions, in appalling housing estates, and so on and so forth. Or dead-end jobs and so on, or unemployed. And then they're surprised they got things like murders and knife attacks and drugs. These are elements of barbarism, which already exist in a country like Britain. And all countries get the same phenomenon. Therefore, our task is to save the youth. And the way to save the youth is by giving the young people a proper education, guaranteed decent education for all youth, free education at all levels, up to university level, should be the case. It was the case in the past. No reason why should not be the case now. Proper education, decent housing, and a decent job with equal wages for all. The basic slogan of our movement: equal pay, equal wages for work of equal value. This is what we must fight for. You see, our criticism of the reformist labour leaders and trade union leaders is not that they stand for reforms. We don't criticise them for that. Our criticism is that they don't stand for reforms. Or leastways, they don't conduct a serious struggle for reforms. We should challenge them. that we must work out a serious program. Let them turn around and say, oh, we can't afford it. There's no money for this. Why is there no money for it? Nobody believes that anymore. If there's trillions for the bankers, why is there not trillions for other things which we need, which we require? Let them answer that argument. And therefore, I believe that the program which we put forward is a realistic program which meets the needs of the masses. But our basic argument is this. You see, you can't cure cancer with aspirins. Drastic problems require drastic remedies. And it is clear that this universal crisis, this global crisis, which is the most terrifying effects, and it's only just begun, people have not really grasped the seriousness of the situation. The only way of dealing with this is by dealing with it at the root. Enough of this nonsense, this piffle about credit crunch and so forth. This is a product of the capitalist system itself, of the market economy itself. And therefore, the idea of nationalization has already been raised now. It's quite amusing. George W. Bush and Gordon Brown are nationalizing the banks. What are you talking about? It is necessary to nationalize the banks. But it's not necessary to nationalize the banks like this, paying them colossal amounts. No bailouts, that's all right. No, none of this nonsense. No bailouts. The banks should be expropriated because they are necessary to society. Everyone agrees that credit is necessary to society. And that the private capitalists have made a complete mess of the entire business. Therefore, it should be expropriated and run under workers' control and management in such a way that the banks and the insurance companies and the other financial institutions can be planned and used for the benefit of the whole of society. That would allow us, for example, to provide cheap mortgages for anyone that required them, cheap credit for small businesses, for small farmers, small shopkeepers, and so on and so forth, and generally provide the necessary flow of investment in order to keep society, keep industry moving, to keep the jobs going. Nationalize the banks, absolutely necessary. Absolutely necessary in order to... It's a fundamental lever for the control of economic life, and it should be taken out of the hands of the parasites and the fat cats and the people that have ruined the economy. It's necessary, but it's not enough. You see the problem of the car industry that's threatening to lay off people, the problem of Woolworths and all these supermarkets, all these enterprises which are either closing down or sacking workers. We say, no, enough of this. It is necessary to nationalize not only the banks and the financial industries, but to nationalize the banks, the insurance companies, and the major industries, the big companies, including the big supermarkets, Tesco's, Sainsbury's, Asda's, MFI, Woolworths, and develop a rational strategy for the production and the distribution of goods within a socialist planned economy. That's the only real solution. Anything else is a lie and a deception of the masses. It's a lie and a deception of the people. It just does not hold water. What is necessary is a root and branch change of society. That's our position. That's the facts. The facts of the matter. It's the fact, yes, it is the facts of the matter. However, we have a problem. We have a duty. We have a task. And that is to persuade people, to convince people by argument.
And that was Alan Woods, British Marxist, speaking of the latest economic crisis and the possibilities for revolutionary action. You've been listening to Seeing Red Radio. If you would like more information, sources for what you heard this evening, music, all that good stuff, check out seeingredradio.wordpress.com. We have past shows and listings for each show. And of course, if you miss one of our shows, you can always check it there as well. Seeingredradio.wordpress.com. Thanks for tuning in. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the music of Flywheel, right here on WXOJLP, Northampton.